This intro is not a meme. It is a group therapy session for Ferrari fans. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 607 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And this is actually one of the quietest weeks we'll have on this podcast channel this week. It's just the one episode for the week. We cover three major series here, and four occasionally when we chuck in WEC or IMSA when we're feeling extra spicy. But this is just a Formula One race weekend. Nice and relaxed, nice and easy, because nothing crazy happened in the past 7 days whatsoever. So we'll quickly talk through the Hungarian Grand Prix for about 15 minutes, and then we can all get out of here and rest up towards IndyCar's big Alex Palou coronation in Portland next week, right?
Yes, this week will be entirely free from any mentions of that damn Spaniard. Either flavor.
Like, we got a whole week off from Spanish domination. We'll figure the rest out later. First and foremost, of course, introducing the rest of our esteemed guests, as you probably just heard. Cam Buckley is here. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. I'm putting together a crowdfunding campaign to get Charles Leclerc some help, because his team isn't going to do it for him now, is he?
That's going to need a lot of zeros on that GoFundMe. Oh boy. That's,
yeah, you know, oof. When you just think of these, like, money-tight, small-budget, mom-and-pop race teams, you, of course, think of Scuderia Ferrari.
Of course. Yeah, you know, they're just, you know, living hand-to-mouth and making ends meet as you do. That's RJ O'Connell. Glad you could join us, as always. And, annoyingly, I've got to be mildly serious for the next couple of minutes because, we talk about our personal stuff here on this pod every once in a while, and this is one of those occasions. We did put up, obviously, our Belgian Grand Prix and IndyCar reviews from last week up, but this is the first time I've actually sat down to drop a recording since the annoyingly sad personal news that I've since worked my last day at the Motorsport Network. I would just like to take this platform and take a couple of minutes just to say thank you to everybody for all the kind words and well wishes and support. It really genuinely does mean the world. I make no bones about it. I never thought in all the nearly 33 years I've been on this planet that I would ever end up actually working for the network that I took the piss out of many a time on this podcast platform, believe me. And at least you can look at it this way. The good news is the Autosport 250 will be back this year. So that's a plus, right?
That is really what y'all are here for.
Of course.
That is the most important media coverage of our time.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, as a genuine fun fact, their editor-in-chief, Mr. Kevin Turner, was actually listening to the podcasts that we were mocking the top 50 that he was orchestrating year on year. I know Kevin's listening to this because I know he does listen to Motorsport 101, and sincerely, I just want to take a quick moment to thank Kevin, because me and him worked so hard on so many of the podcasts that the network put out. We split into the F1, Retro, National, and Racing channels. And Kev was a genuine joy and pleasure to work with. He really did genuinely care about using the brand and using the incredible amount of resources that the network has to its full effect. And it was a genuine privilege to be able to work with him, as well as my line manager, Jason Swales, and the immense video team that I was able to run along with immensely talented people. Jason Swales, Ben Holmes, Charlotte Griffiths, Matt Flyvash, my video team that I was able to work with were incredible. The editorial team, some of them you've probably read about even realizing, Philip Clear and Jake Boxall-Legg, Stuart Codlin, all just immense journalists, and they all bust their ass, and they've had to bust their ass even harder than usual. It's been a difficult year for everybody in the industry, and look, I'm not angry or bitter against them. These are businesses, they make business decisions. I'm just gutted that I can't be there anymore, and I genuinely did love being there. People have offered to say how they can help. Look, I'm never going to say, give me money or go on our Patreon or whatever. I have had the luxury of being able to work at a very privileged sort of job and industry. Not very many people can say they can genuinely work in motorsport. I would be being incredibly selfish and not being a very realistic person if I was going to say, go subscribe to our Patreon if you want to support me and my work. No. There are far more important and needy people in the world that need that money. Go find a Garza family along those lines. Go donate that money to them. They need it. I'm just out of work for a little bit. And I mean that sincerely. Like, please do not do that just thinking, hey, Dre's now broke. You've got to give us Patreon money to support the show. No. I'm blessed to be in a position where the Patreon can keep the show going on its own. So please do not feel like to support me, that's the best thing you can do. The best thing you can do is put my word out there. You know, keep talking, keep listening to M101, keep telling people it's a pod worth listening to. If you really think I deserve to work in motorsport somewhere full time, tell someone who can hire me that they might be able to do that. You know, that's the best thing you can do for me personally right now. Don't feel like you've got to support M101 just, you know, thinking that the show might go away because I'm out of work. That is not the case. Please donate that money to people that are more important than me. That is a Dre Harrison demand. Okay. The show's not going anywhere. That is a promise. And we're going to keep going because that's what we've always done. When I was at WTF1, that didn't change. When I was at the Motorsport Network, that didn't change. But sincerely, thank you for all the well wishes, concern, and support. It really does mean a lot. And I owe it to you, the wonderful M101 audience, that even in difficult times, we're going to try and find ways to entertain you. And that's what I promise and pledge to keep doing. And I'm very privileged and blessed to be able to do that with these two motherfuckers. So let's talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix for a little bit and stop this pity party for a second. But we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about how McLaren tried very hard not to win this race, but ended up getting a gift from Charles Leclerc. Yeah, this was a weird Hungarian Grand Prix. We'll talk about it in a little bit. And yeah, we weren't joking in the intro. This really is a therapy session. Pull up. There will be tears as we talk about yet another haunting.
Really? It's been a while. The Dallas Cowboys of the Formula One World Championship. By the way, Dre, that was one of the tamest, like, just showed up at a new wrestling promotion work shoot promos that I've heard in a hot minute. There's no, like, they never gave me a chance to grab the brass ring. There's no, they held me down this whole time. There's no, please don't.
It was incredibly reserved.
There's no, please don't ask about the 44 mentions in the, well,
I'm not Seth Rollins. Both my knees are fully functional, that I can promise you. Brock Lesnar is not walking through that door. I promise you we're good. So we'll talk all about that and the Hungarian Grand Prix and much, much more over the next 45 minutes or so. But places you can find us, of course, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow us down personally, you can on Blue Sky as well. Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and cpuck317.bscott.social. You can follow us on Instagram at motorsport101pod. You can follow us on TikTok at m101_podcast. Our website is at motorsport101.com. You can check that out to read written reviews of all of our content, including, of course, this past Hungarian Grand Prix that we've just had. Ask Dre will also be out in the next couple of days if you're into that sort of thing. You're going to pick my brains on all things motorsport, and there'll also be a big MotoGP mid-season review in the run-up to Austria in the next few days. So plenty to keep it on tick over. Now, one more time, I will stress, please don't feel like you've got to donate to this now just because I'm out of a job. But if you really, really want to support us financially, and I ultimately can't stop you, it's patreon.com/motorsport101. You can get early access to all of our shows for $5 at a time, and that's per month. You can upgrade to $10 to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason is doing so right now. Thank you very much for the support. especially during times like now. It is your support that keeps this podcast going, even in times like this. So sincerely, thank you. But one more time, please do not feel like you have to do this right now. Okay. Thank you again, as ever. Let's get into the M101 podcast. And once again, after this, let's talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix. Even though my script, I've just realized I've named the whole file Austria. Whoops.
My boy, night. That's got real interesting connotations to the 20th century history.
Yo, it's the Austro-Hungarian Grand Prix. Good job, Dre.
It sure was a hectic 40th Hungarian Grand Prix at the newly revamped Hungaroring. In a shock, Ferrari's Charles Leclerc took pole position to the closest Q3 in F1 history in the same session where Lewis Hamilton didn't make Q3. We'll get to that shortly, but Leclerc did lead two-thirds of the race with a two-stop strategy and enough pace to hold back Oscar Piastri and McLaren. But Leclerc's pace badly fell off after his final stop. Put a pin in that, too. Piastri passed the Ferrari to take second because Lando Norris, who dropped to third after a poor start, changed strategies, ran a one-stopper, led the field, and it led to another McLaren battle for the win. And with Piastri just missing a dive bomb pass on the penultimate lap, it was enough for Norris to take his fifth win of 2025 and reduce the championship gap to just 9 points.
As he holds up 8 fingers.
As we enter the summer break.
What are we doing on this pod? I've apparently mixed up Hungary and Austria, which is very politically charged,
and I can't say the least.
Man continues fighting for the central powers. How many years has it been?
Well, better part of 105.
Well, it could be worse. He could have worn a 1982 license plate.
Oh, no, stop. We're not doing that.
Oh, it's not that episode. Also, in Hungary, again, we have the two McLarens in a battle that they really shouldn't be in this late in the race. Okay, it's not as silly as it was last year in Hungary, gotta say. But still.
Not even a little bit.
It's kind of wild that I think we've had 14 Grand Prix so far this season, and I feel like in at least 4 of them, the McLarens have been battling pretty much all the way to the flag. Like, we had it in Australia to a degree, before that late safety car and Piastri being in the grass trap. We've had it in Austria, we've had it here, we had it in Imola after that final safety car. You know, these two McLarens are just going to keep duking it out right at the end of a race when it matters most and least. It is a lot, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, Oscar was beaten just in qualifying and had to shadow the Ferrari of Charles Leclerc pretty much all the way throughout the race. And ironically, it's the fact that Lando Norris got off the line the best and then had nowhere to go with it. And dropped down to fifth, actually, after turn one, that set up this one stopper, because McLaren got to show off the beauty of having two bullets in the chamber. They had one car that just could not pass, because here, unless you were Max Verstappen and taking extremely undue risk, remember that, it becomes important later, you couldn't pass here. The delta you needed was ridiculous. McLaren was able to get their other car on an alternate strategy to see how it would play out. And it did. And they got a 1-2 out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that, I guess it would be harsh to call it a bad start from Lando, but however you slice it, even if it wasn't necessarily his fault, he still ended up losing 2 spots on the opening lap, drops to fifth, loses a boatload of time having to get past Fernando because I believe the delta that passed in Hungary was 0.9 of a second, which is a lot.
It's so much, because those final two corners, it's like they're designed to kill off any momentum that you might get to go onto the front straight. We got plenty of overhead shots. Actually, TV direction did a great job of showing off some of the fights here. Mm. And you would watch the time and the second car in the queue just bleed away through the final turn. You really needed to be, right, I would say 0.6 behind someone coming onto the main straight. And very rarely could anyone get that close. It was usually 0.8 to 0.9.
Yeah, like you would lose 2 tenths running through those last 2 corners trying to follow the dirty air or another car. And by that point, the gap's at 0.7, 0.8, and you can't pass anybody going that far back. Hungary straight is just not long enough to set that pass up without taking a hellacious amount of risk in order to do it. And yeah, like, a lot of McLaren fans were quite cynical after this race and were very quick, including my own brother, ironically, funnily enough, who's a big Oscar Piastri fan and had to try and drop the barrel of salt that, you know, McLaren was favouring favouring Norris on strategy. And look, first of all, both sides of the garage are in competition with each other. We need to point this out. Like, you know, it's... being able to change strategy on the fly is a key part of racing. And let's be frank, McLaren's not had a good reputation of being able to do that in recent years. They've had many a sloppy weekend when it comes to managing their drivers.
Let's not forget, Dre, like the fact that they had 2 bullets in the chamber to play with here is something that so often wasn't the case for them enough last year, when they did have a car to take it to Max and Red Bull. But Lando was often fighting with one hand tied behind his back because for the most part, he was kind of alone in that fight. Oscar was very up and down last year. And the one time they did have that chance, they raced each other so hard in Monza that Leclerc stole both of their lunch money.
Yeah, I was going to make that exact point about Monza. They were too busy dealing with themselves. They didn't ever consider that Charles Leclerc would run a one-stopper and win off it. And even when Piastri was offered the chance to do so, he said no, because McLaren are very driver-centric. They often let their drivers make a lot of the key decisions rather than the data they have on the pit wall. If you listen to a typical McLaren race in the last couple of years, you will get those radio messages where either Tom Stollard, who is Oscar's race engineer, or Will Joseph, who is Lando's race engineer, they'll have a conversation about, you know, we think this tire is good enough to go to the end. What do you think? And you'll get at least 2 or 3 of those every Grand Prix. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. You know, only the driver really knows what's going on and how their car feels, regardless of what the data may or may not tell you. But I pointed this out, and I made a TikTok about this on our social media. I made a TikTok about this.
Welcome to big 2025.
Yeah, it's what a time to be alive. And I made the point that there was a clear radio message around, I think it was lap 18 or so, where Will Joseph is asking Lando Norris, we're thinking plan A minus 5. And then Lando says, yeah, do it. The tires are gone. And they don't do it. They change their mind. As far as I'm aware, the one stopper was apparently plan D in McLaren's terminology, but they kept Norris out. And then about 10 laps later, they get the radio message of, we're thinking about using the hard tire and going to the end, Lando. What do you think? And then Lando says, sure, why not? Because he knows if he just echoes what Piastri and Leclerc has done, and which was come in really early and basically commit to the two stopper at that point, he's finishing the race at that point, probably in third, given the pace of Leclerc early on and Piastri, who had a lot of track position similar to Charles early on in the race. So by changing their mind and then getting track position and having the car out in front once those second round of stop shake out, he's now forced Piastri to have to pass him on track. And we all know that is no easy task in Hungary. And we've seen it before this season where Piastri has not been able to pass Lando on track straight up. Again, we saw it in Australia. We saw him try a chase down in Austria. It didn't work, and it didn't work again here. Lando Norris, you know, changed the plan. Will Joseph went with a changed plan, and it worked out beautifully for them, because even if we don't take into account Leclerc's meltdown, they pincer movement their way into victory and ended up with a 1-2 finish. It was a brilliantly managed race by McLaren, even if it was by accident.
I don't even think it was necessarily by accident, because the smart, if you're losing to one car and you've got both cars in play, you pincer move them. We watched Red Bull do this shit on a weekly basis back in the day. I am still not forgiving you for Japan 2013, but it worked.
The days of Prime Lotus Romain Grosjean. Good times.
God, remember when Team Enstone knew how to do anything right ever?
Remember when Romain Grosjean?
So long ago.
Remember when Romain Grosjean could maintain steady employment even in the world of sports cars?
Eesh. Yes. Rest in peace to the Lamborghini hypercar program. You died as you lived, barely here. I am sad to see it go, but geez, the way Lamborghinis run that program could be a podcast in and of itself. But look, like, McLaren were losing because in the cooler conditions on Sunday, Ferrari's tire wear up to a certain point was just as good as theirs. Leclerc, for the most part, had Piastri covered. We actually had a radio call early in the race that had Piastri start emptying the tank, cut a little bit into Charles's lead, and then Charles was able to counter that. They used their other car to pincer him. It worked. And even we'll get to the Ferrari meltdown because, oh my God, Ferrari. Piastri probably finishes third.
There's every chance because Piastri would still have to pass him on track.
Yeah. And you just, the delta was too big before the ailment that befell Charles's car. I think McLaren judged this to perfection. And something I didn't get to say, because I was going to roast Lando Norris up and down the fucking street for Belgium, while also praising Oscar. Because for me, I think equal that race, two things can be true. Oscar drove a great race, and Lando had a messy final stint. Lando showed a lot of steel in this race. Like, he had to run that race to perfection. Anything less would not have achieved the win for him, and he did.
No doubt about it, especially given the final five laps when Piastri was within DRS range of Lando Norris. For all the talk we give about Lando Norris and his questionable temperament, whether he's got the bottle to do this, he withstood a much quicker Piastri at the end of that race and held him off for the five laps needed to win. Oscar tried the super dive when we tried in Austria, and once again, it didn't work. Lando had nerves of steel, and he had to win this race, and he did. That was an excellently executed Grand Prix from him and Will Joseph, and Lando did what he needed to do and held up his end of the deal to win. And again, I think the talk of Lando being the bottler and Oscar being the cool head narrative that's been playing out for a good year and a half, I think it's exaggerated. I think we're looking at two very evenly matched drivers here. And I think the fact we've had 14 Grand Prix between them now, with them as the only real title contenders for the majority of that time, and there is 9 points separating them, I think is a testament to the fact that this is going to be tight, and it's going to be those little strategy calls and those little opportunistic moments and twists in the tail that could determine who wins this world championship. I would argue that Will Joseph's had a key hand in two of Lando Norris's victories. Oh, and it's worth pointing out, Lando has now won, what, 4 out of the last 6? Again, for all the talk about Lando being the bottler, he's come back into this. This is not over. This is far from over. This is a real, genuine title fight. And one of, in my opinion, between teammates, one of the closest I can ever remember. Like, we're going into every weekend not having a clue who is going to come out on top between these two. And that's fascinating. Yeah. I love it. This is in a really good place right
now. We've not had that since peak Mercedes, the Hamilton and Rosberg years. Before that, you got to go back to, like, peak Red Bull, Vettel and Webber back in 2010, Hamilton and Button back in 2010, same time. Before that, you've got what? Maybe, I don't know, 96 Williams.
Hamilton and Alonso, 2007.
Yeah, Prost and Senna and McLaren, those 2 years they were together. And look, we're kind of glad as neutral observers. I know there are people that can't stamp high domination in any flavor, but let's face it, McLaren's intra-team battle is giving us all the juice. And we're glad that they are because we're not getting it from Red Bull this year. We're not getting it for Mercedes. And now I think it's time we talk about Ferrari. Because I mentioned that it was a frustrating weekend for Lewis Hamilton. We just mentioned that Charles Leclerc qualified on pole and did not win the race because it's been rough. Charles Leclerc had a mysterious drop in pace of around 2 seconds a lap in the final stint of the race. It led to Leclerc picking up a 5-second penalty for driving a lateral erratically, attempting to fend off George Russell with a sizable move under braking, has to be said. He
looked like he was about to take a page out of George Russell's book and have a taste of some side pod.
It looked like we were going to get Jerez 97. No, you turned into the wrong part of him. But regardless, he gets the 5-second penalty. He falls off the podium and he finishes 42 seconds off the win. But not before he lets off one of the biggest radio tirades of 2025. Quote, "This is so incredibly frustrating. We've lost all competitiveness. You just have to listen to me. I would have found a different way to manage these issues. Now it's just undrivable. Undrivable. We'll be lucky to finish on the podium." He did not finish on the podium. And then on top of that, Lewis Hamilton was eliminated in Q2. He finished 12th in the race. And after qualifying, he called himself useless. In the press conferences, he cryptically referred to talking about there being a lot of things going on. And all this happens the same weekend that Fred Vasseur, team principal, signed a new multi-year extension with Ferrari to stick around. Whew. Well, Micah Parsons may not want to play for the Dallas Cowboys anymore. And if you're a Ferrari fan, I don't phrase this delicately. If you know a very delusional Ferrari fan, they're probably thinking Fred's got to go.
Well, thankfully, I didn't get to hear that from someone in my life because this person tore their ACL over the last 4 days. I'm not exaggerating this, and somehow it feels less painful than this weekend was because, dear God. You know, Lewis Hamilton has scored points in Hungary every time. All of them. Until now. And he wishes that he could have had his race go as badly as Charles Leclerc. Dear God, this man needs some help.
Quote from Hamilton after Saturday qualifying, "They probably need to change drivers." Now, obviously, kind of glad that they can't really, but like, and I don't think they're going to make that move. Because they're not going to change drivers. And they're not going to fire the CEO of Ferrari. So if they need to make a snap move, it's probably going to be tearing up Fred's extension and lighting it on fire and telling him to get out.
They can't do that now. That would be a PR disaster. My first question mark here was, did you need to announce this now? What was the rush to tie Fred Vasseur down? I'm not necessarily saying he should be near the exit door, right? But it's hard to ignore the elephant in the room that Fred had an excellent start to his time at Ferrari, arguably should have won last year's Constructors' Championship. We've talked about it on this show before. Had an excellent first season with the team. Made a big, radical decision to overhaul the majority of that car. And it's ultimately not worked. Ferrari has gone from being a genuine title contender that won multiple races last year with an elite driver lineup to a bit of a janky team that can hover anywhere between second and fourth best team on any given weekend. They're not going to win a major title this year. And even when Charles Leclerc, for the first time, arguably all season, had a car that looked like he could actually win something on merit, straight up.
At a track that was conducive to this sort of thing. If Leclerc just holds track position, he's Gucci. It's the Hungaroring. Overtaking has been harder to come by since...
Max sure got it done in 2022, but that's still one of the most ridiculous drives I ever seen him put up. Yeah, it would have been so easy. And then Charles has an undisclosed chassis failure of some type. We don't know what it is. There have been theories kicked around to this effect. I'm not necessarily going to put stock in any of them yet. Out of nowhere, while he's holding a pretty stable gap to Piastri, he just starts losing a second and a half to 2 seconds a lap. And that's it. He craters in the final stint after Ferrari did the job in the pits, after he did the job all race and on Saturday. And he lost over 33 seconds on track in that final stint.
Startling. I cannot remember seeing someone's car in the middle of the same race just lose so much outright speed.
I can.
So instantaneously. And like, it wasn't like a terminal DNF related issue. It wasn't. I mean, they've already confirmed it wasn't the power unit. They've already ruled that out. They're going to have to clearly take this car back to Maranello and obviously give it some further analysis. But it really doesn't help the old narrative jokes about Ferrari that their car just spontaneously loses 2 seconds of pace a lap, and then all of a sudden Charles Leclerc looks like a donkey compared to what he was. Where, like as RJ said, he had this in the bag through two stops. He'd actually come in first on that front. And basically, Ferrari had played a blinder. They'd already forced Piastri into a situation of run the one stopper or you're going to have to tire delta your way past this again. It was an excellent strategic move from Ferrari to cover off that second stop.
And to that same effect, like, if we talk about McLaren's pincer movement against Ferrari, Ferrari bet on themselves to go after Lando because he was only about 5 seconds behind Lando with a significant tire delta. And given we know what Charles can do overtaking-wise, maybe he can run him down. Maybe he can wear Lando down, force him to use up more of his tires. And instead, the only thing... Remember Silverstone 22 is the time I can think of when Max catches a chunk of sister team car under the floor, and he went from running away with the race to fighting with Mick Schumacher and a Haas. That's the only thing I can think of that was that drastic to just go, oh, floor damage. Goodbye, 2 seconds a lap. You're fucked. It was so... Because he was holding a gap to Piastri, and then suddenly Piastri was practically pushing him through the middle sector. And drove by him and never saw him again.
Yeah, just startling scenes. And yeah, just... Again, it's just extremely haunts. If you know the Ferrari memes and you know how we get down about how people discuss this team, it's just peak Ferrari. And that's probably what's led to the extra vitriolic and salty reactions. It didn't help even more so that Lewis Hamilton had just a poor weekend by his standards. And look, I'm not sure that I would call it a painful listen like some pundits did when they talked about Lewis being so self-depreciating. Lewis has kind of always been that way. I don't want to say always, because the reality is Lewis Hamilton has spent the majority of his years in Formula One in cars that were capable of at least winning a race or two, let alone this Ferrari, which has had no real indication of that until now. And this is a Ferrari that, like, Lewis Hamilton only missed out on Q3 by 15 thousandths of a second. This was more down to it was a ridiculously competitive session as opposed to Hamilton necessarily being poor. I'll give you another example. In Q1, Yuki Tsunoda was only a tenth and a half off Max Verstappen. The closest he's ran him all qualifying, and then all of a sudden, Yuki's out because he's just below the cut line. It's just one of those unfortunate things. So I wouldn't necessarily call Hamilton describing the situation as painful, because the data shows that Hamilton has actually been pretty close to Leclerc for most of this season, especially in the last four weekends. They've been virtually dead level in terms of outright pace. But I don't know. I don't know how much I want to read into Hamilton being cryptic about there's a lot going on. I'd love to hear some explanation as to why that is. Whether there's maybe some ghosts or some paranoia in his head, thinking that the cars may be different or the setups are so radical, because the reality suggests Lewis is not actually that far behind Charles, but the results are now getting more and more drastic as a result. And I think that's got Hamilton spooked to a degree. And that's kind of weird to say about arguably the greatest racing driver of all time.
Yeah.
Well, how you guys feel about it?
I mean, it's a fair case to make that is Lewis Hamilton not gelling with these ground effect cars? There's a body of evidence, just like there's a body of evidence of, look, we know 2005 had other issues, but was that the one year where Michael Schumacher couldn't use his greatest strength of breaking a 300-kilometer Formula One race down into 3 or 4 hyper-fast sprints on low fuel?
Maybe, to a degree. There might be something that, I mean, look, I'm going to say something controversial here that I've never said on this podcast before, and I may even clip this later and see what the reaction might be. I think Lewis probably should have retired at the end of 21.
Okay, I'll hear you out.
The reason why I say this is because, one, it would make the impact of Abu Dhabi hit that much harder if you end up ultimately driving Lewis out of the sport, whether or not he spiritually, morally, or actually did win world title number 8. But if you look at Lewis Hamilton since then, 2022, he was pound for pound trading blows with George Russell's first year in that Mercedes. 23 is the only season where I don't have any question marks about Lewis's year. We all know that was a dominant Max year. Lewis was the clear number 2 guy in the championship that year. 24, he's comprehensively outclassed by George. There's no getting around it. George was just better than him their last year at Mercedes. This year, he's walked into the Leclerc's house, and while he's not being blown out by Charles by any stretch of the imagination, Leclerc has been comfortably the better man overall, whether it be qualifying, where I think he's 10-4 up overall head-to-head, and in race trim, where again, Lewis is not a million miles wide. I think it's about 2 to 3 tenths a lap right now overall on average.
The problem is, Dre, is that 2 to 3 tenths might as well be an eternity in this edition of Formula One. 2 to 3 tenths is 5 or 6 places.
And the problem is, I fully agree, and this is the point I was going to get to. One, there is a lot of convergence on the field now where this has been one of the closest constructors championships I can remember in quite some time in terms of just top to bottom average pace. It's an incredibly close field right now where a bad day can now put you out of the points. It's happened to many a driver here so far this season. Max did it this weekend. George Russell was terrible at home at Silverstone. Charles Leclerc, same deal. Lewis has had a couple of these where he's just had a bad weekend. And if you have a bad weekend now, there are people that can punish you on this grid. There's no doubt about it. This was maybe the most questionable time in Lewis's career to change from Mercedes to Ferrari and start over as you enter your 5th decade of life. And we evaluate Lewis Hamilton in the context of major championships. We all were pushing for Lewis for this move to be the number 8 move. Do you want to get the number 8 title that's eluded you, that you were arguably screwed out of in 2021? The way this is going, if you can't beat Charles Leclerc over a season, forget it. It's not happening. And I think there may have to be a bit of a reassessment as to what Hamilton can be in a Ferrari at this stage in his career and against one of the best drivers in the world in Charles Leclerc right now. And I'm not sure his fan base and audience are ready for that.
Well, they're not. That's an easy answer. But like, I'll make a MotoGP comparison because I got to hear kind of outside our own circle where we all just worship Marc Marquez. Yeah. Sure. All the haters are absolutely right. There was so much talk like going into this season from outside about like, Pecco is more measured. Pecco is more, he is a more thinking man's rider. He's more precise when in fights with people. And my counter to that was always just, yeah, but what are you going to do if Marquez is just faster? And there is only one person that I can comfortably say I think would be faster than Charles Leclerc in the same machinery. It'd be Max Verstappen, who has committed to the Red Bull hot mess until further notice, by the way. That's now dead.
Mercedes, you can't have him. We can't have any silly season intrigue. That's done and dusted.
At the end of the day, Charles Leclerc is just plain fast. He's been too fast for everyone who's been put up against him. The only person who held any kind of candle to him was their first year together with Seb in 2019, where the final points gap probably looks worse on Seb than it actually was. But from there forward, Leclerc has just smoked everyone next to him to some varying degree.
And these are, and this is a Hall of Famer in Sebastian Vettel, one of the 10 to 12 greatest Formula One drivers that's ever lived, and Carlos Sainz, who is a multiple-time race winner, two-time M101 Driver of the Year contender on this very podcast, and just still arguably one of the 8 or 9 best drivers in Formula One right now. Probably was top 5 or 6 before he went to Williams. He's been a bit struggly this year, but that's understandable given it's a brand new team. Carlos Sainz is a damn good racing driver. Do not make any mistake about that.
Charles Leclerc punched his lights out.
Yeah.
Well, if you ask some Carlos Sainz fans to say, oh, it really wasn't that lopsided. Now, come on now.
It probably wasn't in the grand scheme of things, but he had Carlos's number for most of their time together.
Yeah, Charles was just it wasn't by a blowout, but Charles was comfortably the better driver. I think that's fair to say.
But that's pretty much how this year's going, is that most of the time it hasn't been a blowout. But at the end of the day, if you're 2 to 3 tenths behind Charles Leclerc, that's a big ass gap at the end of a race. And that, I think, is the more concerning thing. I don't think people would have been particularly shocked if Charles had the advantage over him in qualifying. It's the fact that Charles is torching the man on race pace. And that's not really been a weakness of Charles, but it's been an overriding narrative for the last couple of years. I think he's cured that for the most part in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Didn't have a whole lot else to do in 2023 with Red Bull running roughshod over the field. If you watched last season and you saw how the showdown with Russell went, if you're a neutral observer, and I don't particularly have a dog in this fight, you probably saw this coming.
I did. I said it when Spencer Hall was on this very pod. I said, I think people grossly glossed over last season, like, especially given towards the end of that season, I think a lot of people focused on Hamilton's final race for the team in Abu Dhabi, and it was an excellent comeback after getting a bit of bad luck with Kevin Magnussen and the bollard in Q1, but they conveniently ignored races like Qatar, where Hamilton sped in the pit lane, or another example like Austin, where he was just straight up bad and wrecked the car on his own. Like, Hamilton looked like he was phoning it in towards the end of that run. There's no getting around that. And I don't know how much of that was demotivation, how much of that was having one foot out of the door at Mercedes, how much of that was maybe being frozen out as they have to worry about moving on. But it just looked like Hamilton was just not interested. I don't know.
And the thing is, Trey, like, wouldn't you think he'd be more motivated to show Mercedes what they're losing by not giving him the contract he wanted?
Which is why I don't think it's a mental thing. It's why I think, like, George was just better down the stretch in their time together as teammates. But I think a lot of the Hamilton audience latched on to the more emotional moments, that final race in Abu Dhabi, the win he had at Silverstone at the British Grand Prix, which was an epic win. No one's disputing that. Or the win he inherited in Belgium when George Russell was DQ'd. There were still many a Hamilton highlight in 2024, but that's just it. They were highlights. George Russell was the better man last year. And look, this is no disrespect to George Russell. George Russell is a damn good racing driver, and he's having a fantastic season right now to be fourth in the standings.
Another podium George Russell. For the year. Oscar Piastri was about 5 inches away from giving George Russell an equally hilarious 2 liters collide win, and equally close to giving Fernando Alonso one of objectively the funniest podiums of his career.
That would have been a hell of a trip for that to happen. Maybe we're all reading too. I think to a degree, a lot of us are reading a lot into the Hamilton, because look, it's Lewis Hamilton. People are going to talk about him. He is the transcendent face of this sport. So there's going to be big conversations on both sides of the aisle. As I say many a time when there's big discussions on both sides of the aisle, the reality is probably somewhere in the middle. But if you're evaluating Lewis Hamilton with, like, I think you should, which is in the context of I'm going for a world championship in a car that we thought going into the season was going to be a contender for a championship, this is a disappointment. There is no getting around that for me at this point. We've had 14 rounds. That's a big enough sample size.
Well, you see, Dre, the mistake in the first place was picking Ferrari.
I could have told you that one for free.
Exactly.
And you know, right? They're not going to get rid of Lewis Hamilton. They're not going to fire him.
No, of course not.
So you know what they're going to do. is there going to make a change at the top of the management at the team? Then maybe they change the technical director. I'm not completely
convinced of that fact.
Right. And it would be the stupid move to do, but it's so Ferrari. It would be so Ferrari for them to just completely change things up, going into a new cycle of regulations.
I'm going to be completely real with you for a minute.
DeAndre.
I am concerned that Ferrari clears the decks at the end of 26.
Let's say they're the clear third or fourth best team when the new regulations hit next year, and they're nowhere near title contention, similar to where they are this year. Where,
okay, if 2014 happens again.
If that happens, do they get rid of Fred? Does Lewis just say, you know what, I'm calling it a day, because that was the three-year plan done and dusted?
I'm worried that everyone involved, Charles included too, just gets the boot, and it's full blown Game of Thrones inside that team, because we've seen it before, and Ferrari has not been shy about doing it, no matter the number of championships that someone wields walking into that team. It happened to Seb. It happened to Prost.
It happened to Alonso.
It happened to Alonso. It happened to Niki Lauda. Ferrari are Ferrari, and Ferrari are the worst. They are the Dallas Cowboys of Formula One. They've thrown a pick six after leading the entire game. They've just lost, and Jerry Jones ain't going to fire anyone named Jerry Jones.
But that's
it's always someone else's
but
fault.
But the problem is that Ferrari, John Elkann, is not as charismatically stupid as Jerry Jones.
That's very true.
We don't know that yet. Because past Ferrari management has been.
Yeah, Luca Domantasemolo was a different animal entirely.
We haven't seen John Elkann go through blowing an entire new set of regulations day one, like they did in 2014. Because, what was it, three team principals in the space of...
Remember Marco Mattiacci?
9 months? No one does. He is currently buried under Maranello.
That's right. So what do? You bring in Arriva Bene, you fire him, you get that new manager bump with Bonato. Then things tail off, and you fire him, get that new manager bump with Frank Vasseur. Then things tail off, and then cycle repeats ad infinitum until maybe you break the cycle.
You know what Michael Schumacher had to do to break the cycle?
Just bring in his guys.
Just turn them into Red Benetton.
Yeah. How many of his dudes did he bring over to make that Ferrari work?
Everyone who mattered.
Yeah. Look, I was going to say, like, this is, like, it's been a perpetual cycle of cleaning up mess at Ferrari on and off for the last 17 years since they last won a major championship. And it's going to be 18 because they're not winning anything this year worth a damn. Nope. And it's those sorts of weekends from Ferrari that will put pressure on Fred Vasseur, even if he doesn't deserve it. Because I've said, we think we're all in agreement here that Fred is nowhere near firing range.
Yeah,
he is not the problem with this team.
Yeah,
absolutely not. And we all know that in good faith. However, it's a bit like being... Formula One is now a lot like football, where... Now the team principal gets chopped more often than ever if shit goes wrong. Look at it this way. Besides Toto Wolff at Mercedes, no team principal on this grid has been in their current position longer than 2023.
Let's remember for ourselves, Christian Horner was not fired due to the scandal. He was fired because the Austrian side of the team got control. The Thai side of the team lost their 2%. And since then, Helmut Marko and Minslav have literally been parading around in front of employees loyal to Horner. Oh, that sucks now, don't it?
Christian Horner, who we thought was one of the most untouchable people in this paddock and who survived a major sexting scandal.
Yeah, he was not untouchable. And that's my thing. It's just like, we know Fred Vasseur is not the problem, but does... delusional, terminally online Tifosi fan who is going through every Formula One race weekend wondering if this is their 13th reason, are they going to give Fred Vasseur that same benefit of the doubt? You tell me.
No, and that's why racing fans, thank God for all of us, don't run the racing teams. And you know, it ain't going to happen to Toto Wolff either because he owns a third of that team.
Right. Unless he steps down himself, no one is firing him. Like, and that man's won, what, 15 world titles? Like, he's one of the greatest team principals in Formula One history, no matter how you slice it.
We asked a similar question when it came to Joseph Newgarden struggling form in IndyCar. Just like, yeah, this is the guy that you should be replacing and not Will Power. Okay, but who are your replacement options? And if your main answer is anything other than, I don't know, somebody else want to be better, you don't have a clear-cut
answer.
The
internet is not prepared for the Christian Horner Lewis Hamilton team.
No, because he's got to go form the Axis of Evil with Flavio Briatore and Alpine.
Good luck with that.
Because that's just it. If you are talking about replacement options, it's obvious. Number one with a bullet is Christian Horner. Like, if you're weighing this up purely on his ability to run a team and the success that's come with it, Christian Horner is by a country mile the favorite. Yeah,
the optics will be
ready. Would never, ever, in a trillion years, give him the control he'd need.
Yeah.
And he would get there, he would try to exert his will, and Ferrari management would kick his ass out before he could enact any real change.
Because
the whole reason why the Ross Braun, Jean Todt, Luca de Montezemolo, like, combination worked.
The Rory Byrne era.
Those four together said, hey, if one of us goes, we all go. And they sealed themselves from Ferrari's management. And eventually, Ferrari's management won and broke that up. And within 3 years, the Ferrari that brought the entire world to heel, the empire of evil in the early 2000s, that was dead by the end of 2008.
Red Bull Christian Horner walking in the team as a fresh-faced 30-something into a team that basically just needed an identity is not going to be the same as 50-something Christian Horner walking into Ferrari, who is very proud to a fault about what they are and what they expect to be. That's why I think that man is just going to, I don't know, collect checks as like a TV pundit or a podcaster before he ever gets back in the game. And if he does get back in the game, it's probably going to be an Alpine. It's probably going to be working side by side with Briatore.
And it's probably going to be on an ownership stake.
Yeah, and that ain't happened with Ferrari.
Let's clean up the rest of the news before we get out of here for F1 summer break. Max Verstappen, we've barely talked about him in this podcast. He had a very quiet race by his standards in terms of outright results.
I don't know if quiet's the word.
Well, position-wise, it was certainly quiet because he spent the majority of this race running in fifth, mostly because he had a poor qualifying session. I'll give him this. He was the only one who was being able to make that car pass people at the goddamn Sector 2 chicane, which was crazy.
Merciless. Merciless to a fault. I mean, Max is going to find... He was making shapes around this track trying to get around people. Unfortunately, much the Iowa IndyCar problem, the first four or five laps come off the tires and then you weren't passing anybody. Red Bull tried a very, very odd strategy. Pitted him early and it just ended up keeping him in the dirty air train pretty much all day. They actually would have been better off, rather than doing that final stop that they did, they would have just been better off leaving him out there.
Yeah, they didn't commit enough to the one stop. They because Max was one of the first to come in. I think it was around lap 17, so he'd had to have run 53 laps on a hard compound tire, and that was just not feasible. So they had to. They basically committed to the two stopper early on, when one was clearly the play. Because if you look at all the midfielders in that race, they all ran one-stop races. That was the strategy that was worth running, which, to be fair, even Pirelli didn't think the one-stopper was the play. But it turns out the tire wear was actually better than expected.
It was much cooler,
and that's what led to better tire wear. And as a direct result, a lot of the midfield who ran one stoppers, Fernando Alonso in P5, Gabriel Bortoleto, who was sensational in P6.
Bortoleto in P6, man.
Lance
Sauber
Stroll
continue to eat good.
Lots Stroll in P7. They all ran one stoppers and they all reaped the rewards for it. Gabriel Bortoleto, who, by the way, has now scored points in three of his last four races and now has a P6 finish. That boy, nice. That boy, nice. Gabriel,
my driver of the day.
Gabriel Bortoleto now has Sauber knocking on. I know Aston Martin just overtook them, but like, he's keeping them close.
Aston had their best day of the year.
Yeah. Aston had by far their best day. Did they understand an upgrade package? I know it took them a while, but did they do it? Or is this just...
Well, they had a good one. They had a good one a couple races ago, and it wasn't too bad. And then they brought a major upgrade for Spa, and they were fucking horrible.
Maybe this was just all like weekend? They were bringing that upgrade package for Hungary, but then they forgot, oh, yeah, Belgium's before Hungary, not after.
It is wild how close the bottom half of the boys are. If you look at the bottom half of the Constructors' Championship, Williams are fifth on 70 points. But they've been outscored in the last 6 weekends by a bunch of the teams below them, and they're starting to close them in. Aston Martin's now sixth on 52, as RJ alluded to. Their best weekend of the year, 16 points from Aston Martin, put them now into P6. They're 1 point ahead of Kick Sauber on 51, who, again, great weekend for Bortoleto, scoring 8 points in P6, but they ended up still getting passed by Aston Martin. Racing Bulls, who again, not bad. Liam Lawson was eighth, a very nice 4 points for Racing Bulls. They're now eighth on 45 points. Like Haas, who by the way, fun fact, have 2 points more than they did after 14 races last year. They're ninth on 35 points. 35 points is ninth in the Constructors right now. And Alpine are on 20 points and they are dead last. Do you know how crazy that is? That a team's got 20 points and are bottom of the Constructors' Championship right now?
Yeah, and pretty much all of it is on Gasly just driving everything that that car has. Franco Colapinto, ass.
Franco Colapinto, where did you go?
And it didn't help that they had a tire test with Alpine after the weekend was over. And Colapinto wrote off a car there, too.
You think he's the guy that's
it's going great.
I think he is the guy that, among others, needs a summer break right now. Maybe Haas needs a summer break because it's not been a good stretch for them. Obviously, if you're Ferrari, you just need a summer break. You need weeks off from watching this crap.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you're Red Bull, you really need the summer break as well. Get into Max also accomplished one of his passes by making Lewis Hamilton shit a diamond on the way by. Stuck his nose up the inside of what was it, turn four, which is not typically where you pass someone. And effectively, Lewis saw this happening, said, "I choose life," and got the fuck out of the corner. This was later not penalized to much splitting of the room.
Yeah, generally speaking, ultimately, there's nothing in the book to ding him with. Because you can't argue that he forced another driver off the road when the other party openly admits that they went off the track to avoid action or avoid contact. You, at that point, you can't say he was forced because the other guys admitted that he went off himself. You didn't cause a collision because there was no contact. And you can't really say he was driving erratically because Verstappen made the corner. So by the letter of the law, there's nothing to ding Verstappen with. And I love that the stewards in the document described it as ambitious because it certainly was.
I like how Lewis was so done with this entire weekend that he did not bother to show up. He had a team representative actually go in his place and basically said, yeah, bailed out of the corner.
So at that point, you can't punish him with anything because there's nothing to ding him with in the rule book. Like all the normal driver stuff, we concern ourselves with penalties. Verstappen doesn't meet the criteria of any of them. If he initiated contact, then there would have been an argument he forced Hamilton off, but Hamilton admitted he went off himself. So do I like it? No, I think it's another one of those sneaky Verstappen tactics to spook somebody off the track. He's done it to Hamilton before. 2021's a prime example of that with tracks like Imola and Spain.
Well, that was contact.
That was contact. When again, that was put down as a lap one incident. But under the letter of the law, you can't ding him for it. So I guess that's that.
I think you should use a summer break to force a promotion back to Racing Bulls.
Unironically, given Liam Lawson actually beat Max with that Max's disastrous strategy. Got to him, couldn't pass him. Liam Lawson, low key, not bad the last 2 months.
He's driving like the 4 or 5-star prospect we were all hoping he'd be.
Again, points in 3 of the last 4 races, including a 6th and 2 8th places. That's really good work from Liam Lawson. That's the sign of a driver that might be getting his confidence back, which is what he needs. And this is exactly why Lawson was chanced on in the first place. That's why. So good to see that Lawson's back to something near his best.
Yeah, it's frustrating, actually. Yuki did not have too bad a weekend in terms of pace, but that gap between Max and himself was enough to KO his weekend with all the traffic.
Given he was running softs at one point, it became a glorified test session for that car by the end of the weekend, which is just, again, it's just tragic. And if there's one other thing that needs a summer break, it's going to be Zach Brown. And the reason why I say this is because if people keep bitching about strategies and what side of the garage to run, you're going to have a conversation as to whether you can placate your driver's egos competing for this championship, or you take the coward's way out and say, we're both locking you into strategies and we're going to run you both equally. And even if we lose the odd race in doing so, we're going to wash our hands of any accountability of saying that we're going to be biased one way or the other in this title race. Good luck.
I don't like Zach Brown's McLaren, mainly because I don't like Zach Brown. I say this as a signed card-carrying member of the Alex Palou fan club, founder and chief. I like the fact that they went racing here.
I'll give Zach this. He's always let them race. And fair play to him for that, because he doesn't have to do that.
I like the fact that they'll run an alternate strategy. If it looks like they're going to lose a race with the one car, that they'll throw the other car into the mix doing something different.
It's how I'd like to run a racing team if I was in Zach's position. I can't even argue with that. That's
good. And what's going to happen? What are they going to lose the Constructors' Championship? Fucking chance.
Oh, oopsie. Well, there's still time for some corporate espionage stories to come creeping up here in the next few races.
Oh boy, are we going to switch it around and we're going to start peeling red paint off the Ferrari and its papaya underneath? That'd be the best thing to happen to Ferrari in the last 10 years.
They wish they were that good.
No kidding. That'll just about do it for this episode of Motorsport 101. We are back next week for what is probably going to be Alex Palou's title coronation in Portland.
Type of coronation. Now with a little bit
It's not like he has an average finish of 4 at Portland.
Is that good?
Yeah.
It's low by his standards.
Now with more investment from one of America's biggest 4 television networks.
Yes, Fox has bought a third of IndyCar. That's going to be something worth talking about on next week's show, let me tell you. But until then, you know where you can find us. Until next week, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. We'll see you for Alex Palou's coronation on next week's podcast. Until then, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Only I might not be, because I'm going to brave the danger presented by Krista Hardy and fly out to Indiana.
Have fun with that.